Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking, winner of the 2019 Bonds, Loans and Sukuk Award for Corporate Debt Deal of the Year. That's Africanacity. APSA is a registered FSP. Good evening and welcome to the Friday evening edition of The Money Show. Touch base with Carol Payton in a moment at Business Day on the resignation of Martin Kingston on the eve of make or break weekend for the future of SAA. We'll talk to Gary McNamara from Sunland Private Wealth about today's China trade numbers. Also, very nice growth numbers, still above 6%, really boosting demand for shares on the JSE today. And those commodities being supported by the underlying commodity shares being supported by underlying commodity prices. Palladium has gone mad, up 9% on the day, virtually double what it was this time last year. We'll also bring you the best bits from The Money Show from the week that has been, and we'll do the brutal biz quiz, all of that on this Friday evening.
702. Bruce is on The Money Show.
Well, this time yesterday, the Director General in the National Treasury, Dondo Mohajane, was indicating to us that a deal was imminent on the last minute, 2 billion rand in funding that would avert the likelihood of the airline being placed under liquidation as early as next week. This afternoon, though, reports that a key non-executive director at SAA, Martin Kingston, had resigned, that later confirmed. And what implications does that have for the airline? Martin Kingston's suggesting not many, but let's get the view of Carol Payton this evening, the writer at Business Day. First things first, Carol Payton, Martin Kingston's resignation this evening, coming on the eve of a debt deal or no debt deal for SAA. It feels ominous, is it?
I don't know so much, Bruce. You know, I think that the company is in business rescue and the directors have a limited role while it is in business rescue, and the business rescue practitioners have full control. So I don't think it's a case of sort of jumping before it sinks or anything like that. I just think that it's been a pretty challenging period for a long time on this board. Directors of the board have had to take risk, but they've actually really had very little authority because the shareholder sort of retains a lot of that authority. So I'm not reading a huge amount into it. I mean, I don't think it has any bearing on the deal, whether there is a deal, whether there isn't a deal, and so on.
Now, what on that deal, is there a deal in the offing? I mean, Dona Mohajane is suggesting last night that they'd had a very productive day yesterday. Don't know what they did today, but certainly it seemed like a deal was in the offing.
I don't know. I really don't know. I think that, you know, we've heard this for a while now, that this money is going to be raised. And until they actually say that the money is on the table, I don't think there is a deal. And the business rescue practitioner has said that, you know, Sunday is D-Day. I suppose by Sunday they need to make a decision as to whether they're going to have to, you know, cut back operations. So I think it's we'll know by Sunday. I don't know. And if there was a deal, why don't they tell us?
Just announce it, yes. Get it over and done with and get rid of the uncertainty. That's what we would like. Is there a risk of liquidation, or is it simply a risk of, well, if there is no deal on the table, if there is no money, SAA can't fly as many planes and we'll have to start slashing and burning in terms of routes and things? I mean, what is one anticipating?
Well, you know, the Les Matheson said that he's not considering liquidation as a scenario at this point. And I can see that that's possibly the case in the sense that, you know, they haven't really tried restructuring operations. Everything's been running pretty much as normal. But that said, you know, there has to be a risk of liquidation. You know, there always has to be a risk of liquidation when a company goes into business rescue, because if that rescue fails, then of course the company has to be liquidated. And I think that one of the big concerns of the business rescue practitioners is that liquidation, you know, SAA is insolvent, and if it was to be liquidated, there would be very, very little, you know, in the rand, you know, number of cents in the rand. He's suggesting that most creditors would get 0 cents in the rand. You know, after the airline leases are called and so on, and employees sort of claims are settled, there won't be anything left for anyone else. And I think that, yeah, even if those claims are in fact settled in full.
Now, politics shouldn't matter in this particular case, but it is a critical weekend, ANC National Executive Committee meeting over this weekend. And, of course, it's a critical one for Cyril Ramaphosa, who's, you know, possibly feeling a little bit vulnerable right now. He's under pressure to get rid of Pravin Gordhan. There is a strong movement against Pravin Gordhan at Eskom. There are all kinds of political pressures at play. And to be acknowledging that SAA has failed on the same weekend as all of these other issues coming to the fore a week before Tito Mboweni goes to put on a brave face in Davos a week before Cyril Ramaphosa goes off to the UK-Africa Investment Summit. You know, the timing of this stuff is pretty awful.
It's awful, but it's also been coming for some time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been lurking. And the fact that it's come to this at this point and they're unable to choose the exact moment when SAA might fail is really due to the fact that, you know, they postponed. You know, Treasury has known, government has known since the 5th of December that SAA would require at minimum this $4 billion to fund the rest of the business rescue process. And yet that money has never, the second $2 billion has never been made available. So the fact that it hasn't failed up until now is actually probably due to procrastination on the part of everybody rather than any kind of, you know, bad timing. Unfortunately, you know, I think it's just had to come at some point.
I'm yet to see a business book written with procrastination being a positive thing in its title. I mean, I'm going to look on the shelves this weekend. Exclusive Books has got titles on absolutely everything. I've never yet seen one on procrastination being the saviour of entities. But yeah, I mean, yesterday we got the communications minister, you know, saying she's going to go and meet with Telkom because Telkom can't possibly be considering getting rid of 3,000 people in order to, you know, to improve its financial position. Government would be intensely hypocritical if it allowed SAA to fail this weekend or next week or any time soon, because there were 6,000 people dependent on the airline for the 10,000 people with all the support industries dependent on it for their jobs. So government's damned if it doesn't. But at some point, if it doesn't make any decisions, the decision will be made for it. It's economics.
Well, that's exactly the problem. So, you know, those jobs have been retained for a long time now, but at enormous cost to the taxpayer. So, you know, yes, no one wants to see 10,000 people lose their jobs, or even a small portion of that. But at the same time, those jobs are costing the state and costing the taxpayer substantial amount of money. The airline has lost $28 billion in the last, you know, since, in the last 10 years. So it's enormous. Enormous cost.
It's a huge cost. Carol Payton, thank you, as always, for your deep insights into what is happening in the public sector, particularly at SAA at the moment. SAA under a huge amount of pressure. Another company facing a really interesting sort of tipping point is Life Healthcare, announcing this morning that its chief executive, Dr. Shrey Virana, stepping down as the company's chief executive and board member with immediate effect. And a statement from the company saying, Dr. Virana emigrating to Australia for personal and family reasons, and the group, you know, issuing this update to shareholders. Now, I saw a tweet from Catherine Child. Catherine is a former EWN reporter. She, I think, is Business Day nowadays. Certainly, she is a prolific writer in the healthcare sector, is Catherine Child. And she was saying, you know, it was quite interesting when NHI was announced and Shrey Virana went up and hugged the health minister and congratulated him and told him this is exactly what the country needed. And she suggested that there was an amount of a double standard That was the implication coming to bear here. The company saying its chief financial officer, Pieter van der Westhuizen, will serve as acting group chief executive effective immediately, also retaining his position as chief financial officer. But yeah, we see these stories of migration coming in waves. And yeah, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence of migration and waves of people leaving the country, seeking better alternatives for their families, concerned about the future. And it's a perfectly understandable concern. It really is. But government can choose, and it is all about choice, to start sending more positive messages. I'm looking forward to being in Davos next week. I'm looking forward to being there with Tito Boweni and seeing how he interacts with members of the global investment community. I want to see with my own eyes, up close and personal, how South Africa is treated. The last time I was there was just after Nhlanhla Nene got fired. I mean, and that was a dog show of epic proportions. Nobody from the South African government delegation wanted to be there. It was deeply uncomfortable. Nobody came to visit the South Africa stand. It was the loneliest place on earth. It was like Antarctica in the middle of a blizzard. There's one scene where Ebrahim Patel, who was then Trade and Industry Minister, and Jeff Radebe, and Rob Davies. They were standing in the smallest semicircles. And only Pravin Gordhan, who had just been reappointed as finance minister, seemed to be enjoying himself. And he was in a corner of the room talking to business leaders and managed at that meeting of the World Economic Forum in Davos, at the Kirchner Museum in Davos, to get business leaders and say, look, when we get back, let's get this CEO initiative going. And CEOs climbed on the bandwagon. They said, absolutely, government can't do it by itself. Business has to be involved. And it's been a hugely collaborative effort, but it's wearing thin. Patience is wearing thin. And everyone's going to be on their best behavior next week in Davos, and everyone will talk up South Africa. And everyone's going to be negative a bit about it and be downbeat about it. But at the same time, we've got to be realistic. If we don't get those strong policy positions, if we don't get the South African government going, okay, fine, we will continue to support SAA. And you know what the consequence of that is going to be? We're going to cut thousands of jobs in the Department of Public Enterprises or whatever the case is. There's got to be a quid, there's got to be a pro, and there's got to be a quo. Three friendly neighbors. And there have to be compromises and tough calls made. Those tough calls will be announced in the budget, of course. That'll happen on in the last week of February, the last Wednesday of February. But time is running out to make big, tough decisions. And if we don't make those tough decisions on our own terms, those decisions are going to be made for us. And then they're out of our hands. Because when the money runs out and you go to the world with a begging bowl, the world will only do so with very, very clear constraints.
The Money Show. The markets.
Like most barriers, once they're broken, they seem to be broken more and more often, whether it's the 4-minute mile, space travel, company valuations. I mean, all of these things, they're sort of psychological barriers. See, Google's owner Alphabet has become a $1 trillion company for the first time. It makes it the fourth of the US companies to reach that level of value. Alphabet is worth $1 trillion. The final minutes of trading on Thursday night, the shares closed at a record high of $1,450 each, which is record levels for Alphabet. And now speculation is Amazon will be next, at currently worth $931 billion. But as these things fall, they seem to fall more and more rapidly. And today's market activity, Gary McNamara from Sundown Private Wealth, massively positive. Was it all due to China sentiment, because they came out with some trade numbers and some growth numbers, and both were surprisingly good?
It certainly was a good catalyst, Bruce. You know, the 6.1% GDP growth, it is a low absolute percentage number, but if you look at it in terms of the base effect, it's a massive number, 6.1% growth, and I think it was in line with expectations, but the market took it quite positively. There's been some sort of deal making on the trade side, so the market's on the positive from that side. In particular, as you talked about, in the American market, some of those technology social media stocks, the likes of the Googles and the Amazons, are in a very strong space. They're on the front foot, and they're taking a very strong position and consolidating. Valuations are a little bit more difficult because they are getting a little bit high on the high side, particularly in the American markets, but at this stage, very strong, and the bond market's taking a backward seat.
Yeah, most certainly is for now. The JSE closing above the 59,000 level, but that 59,000 being achieved primarily by commodity counters, and those commodity counters obviously responding to the China, to the better of China growth numbers and trade numbers coming through locally. And we had an interest rate cut yesterday, and it's like interest rates have gone up. Banks are down, retailers are down, and the trading updates coming out of the retailers aren't awful, are they?
No, absolutely, and it's a strange one because normally, and it was not a surprise interest rate cut yesterday, but it certainly wasn't consensus. It was a marginal decision. I think it was the right one, positive. But as you say, the retailers were slightly off today. The banks were also off, and it was all really on the resources side, driven by palladium. But on the retailers, we had quite strong trading update from Mr. Price. They were up in the third quarter, like-on-like sales, 3.5%, which was positive, bearing in mind that it's off a very low base, and there was a little bit of a stabilization in the gross margin side as well. And the Fashini Group also, their festive season, had quite strong numbers. But again, both of them were off today. Mr. Price actually had quite a nice run up in the last month or so, maybe anticipating some decent trading update, but they were all off, and surprising. But it's a continuation of what we saw last year, where it was very much a resource-dominated performing market, and South Africa Incorporated, with the banks and the retailers certainly lagging in the local market.
Mr. Price went and dabbled in Australia and then cut its losses before it did too much harm to itself. But Fashini Group has got businesses in the UK. It's got businesses in Australia too. Are those adding value, or like typically, so many South African companies, particularly retailers that have gone abroad, proving to be something of a drain?
Yeah, Fashini certainly seems to be getting it right. Their overall sales numbers were 4.1% growth, but the Australian numbers per se was 11.4%. So certainly they are doing quite well in the Australian market. And the nice thing is also on the overall numbers is that it wasn't driven by credit sales. They were actually quite muted. They actually declined due to strict credit control, but the cash sales were quite strong at 11.4% up as well. So that was a very good number. And as you say, they are certainly at this stage look like they're getting the Australian business right, where Mr. Price certainly were battling probably subscale, and they were quite quick to cut it at the first half of the last year.
So what's Woolies' excuse then? Anyway, let's not harp on that one. There's a new sheriff in town, or there will be in a month from now, and we'll see whether or not there's a change in fortunes for Woolies in Australia. I was surprised to see just how good Richemont's trading update was, and so was the market, because Richemont, which is a huge business listed on the JSE, seeing a massive increase in sales, 6% share price gain on the day due to big sales increases practically everywhere.
Yeah, very much so. It was a good number, basically 4% up on a like-for-like or consolidated exchange rate basis, on an earnings number 6% up. And really the driver was, which lagged in the first half of the year, was the Cartier and the watch side, which was very strongly up 6%. And I think that eased the market, because they were very worried about that sector of the market, where it was lagging versus your soft luxury goods like LVMH and the handbags side. So that was quite a nice positive on the Richemont side. But the negative was they're still battling with the online retail, where they've invested quite a lot of money, but at this stage pretty much growing in line with the rest of the group. Whereas if you compare it with some of the other competitors, the online is quite a strong strategy. So that still needs a little bit of work, but that was probably the only disappointment. But the market certainly liked it and was quite positively up, as you say, 6% today.
Yeah, no, nice and strong on the JSE. The commodity prices, commodity shares did well on the day. Naspers was up. Retailers struggling to find their feet. Banks also falling sharply. But a huge 9% jump in the palladium price on the day to over $2,500 an ounce, boosted also companies that produce that particular commodity. And the real world pressures, I mean, doing business in South Africa is tough at the best of times. But right now, people are feeling really gloomy and in the doldrums. And the CEO of Life Healthcare becoming a statistic and packing bags.
Yeah, just coming back to the palladium story, it's a very interesting...
nicely dodged. You don't like to talk about people and their personal affairs, whereas I do.
We're trying to keep it positive, Bruce.
No. But I mean, Abdul Baraj, he's made a decision. His family's made a decision, and it's their choice to make. They're globally, they're global citizens, and they can bow out and go where they like, frankly. But it is, I mean, part of a sad trend in South Africa. Let's talk palladium. I'll comment on the people leaving, and you can comment on from Palladium.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story. You know, it's up 82% on a 12-month view, $2,500 and a bit of change, dollars an ounce, whereas platinum, which is the metal that it's mined with, is only up 26% over the same period. Now, both of the metals can be used in AutoCats, etc., but for the moment, because it used to be cheaper, a lot of the manufacturers have changed to palladium, and it's not that easy to change back, but this move is certainly caught the market by surprise. As you say, 9% up today, $220 in one day. It's been almost straight up in the last week. And I don't know, but it looks like somebody's just been caught on the wrong side of this trade, I would suspect, because as you even indicated earlier, the resource shares, the Sibanyas and that, were up quite nicely, but certainly nothing like the palladium price has been up over 9%. Normally, you would see those shares up 10 or 12%. So I think they're also taking this move with a pinch of salt, but it certainly helped the market and was quite a nice good news story. We'll probably find out what the drivers were in the next weeks to come, but I feel somebody's probably on the wrong side of some sort of trade.
Gary McNamara, thank you. He is at Sunlum Private Wealth, tonight's market commentator.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that gives your business access to a corridor of possibilities. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Welcome to The Money Show on this Friday evening, bringing some of the best bits of The Money Show from the week that has been. Plus, we'll play the Brutal Biz Quiz this Friday night. A couple of your SMSs tonight. Would it not be better for South Africa to be under control of the IMF rather than having this procrastination from a bunch of looters managing the country? When there are print... I can't see how being dependent on international funding to the extent of the IMF is ever a good thing. We want control over our financial destiny. And that's what's so maddening about this situation, where politicians cannot make the correct decisions, the tough decisions, make those calls before those calls are forced upon us, because if we don't make the calls, they will happen anyway, so they're just delaying the inevitable. So rather have control of the process, or do you not want to be the politician that is seen to have been disloyal to your electorate? You're being fundamentally disloyal as a politician to your electorate if you fail to do the job that you've been hired to do. That's my view anyway. Bruce, you remind me of President Ramaphosa. Oh, that's nice. Rich, urbane, sophisticated, well-dressed. Oh, no. You always surprised. You get to see a police march at Boboinha's funeral, and that shows you how government is run. No, it doesn't. There's a couple of palooka policemen who can't tell their left from their right. It's a disgrace, yes, but don't come back those stupid sort of connections. Those are not the connections that are helpful or semi-intelligent, but I'm glad I remind you of somebody powerful and urbane.
702. Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
Coming up in a moment, the best bits of The Money Show from the week that has been. But on your next Money Show, I'll be on transit by planes, trains and automobiles to Davos in Switzerland. But I'll bring you the sounds and the sights and everything you need to know about the world's most influential gathering of elites from the World Economic Forum at Davos in Switzerland. Throughout the week, I'll be joining Arabile on The Money Show Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to bring you a taste of what it's like in Switzerland at minus 10.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702. For the curious.
Welcome to The Money Show this Friday night. Well, the Reserve Bank yesterday cut interest rates by 25 basis points. Now, the vast majority of players in the markets anticipated that the governor, Lesetša Ganyaho, would remain characteristically conservative, and his Monetary Policy Committee too, and they've resisted cutting interest rates because of the huge risks to the South African economy. Not because of interest, not because of inflation, because inflation is almost negligible in South Africa right now, but mostly because of the risk of downgrade and the risk to the currency and just lots of uncertainty. Well, the governor did give us a sense that he might be obliged to start pulling in to help grow the economy. I spoke to Isa Mhlanga, the Alexander Forbes chief economist, and I said to him, why are they cutting?
The Reserve Bank is always cares about economic growth. It's not an explicit target for growth, but they do inflation targeting to make sure that prices are stable in the interest of balanced and sustainable growth. And a less than 1% economic growth is just not sustainable. Just think about what level of economic growth do we require for us to stabilize our debt. We need 2.6% upwards sustainably. And if you're growing it less than 1%, we're going to 1.9% in 2022. It means we are nowhere close to that. And we are facing an economic crisis. Just to illustrate, The generation of the fee-free education of 2018 finishes their first degree this year, and they'll be waiting for jobs. Is the economy ready for those with those jobs?
No, it's not. It's not. Companies are cutting back everywhere. The public sector is looking to cut back in many respects as well. We're facing brutal, brutal realities. Final question. Is this the first of several rate cuts this year? The first of two rate cuts this year? What is your assessment?
Potentially the first of two, but the Reserve Bank is likely to wait a bit and see what happens in the budget and what Moody's is going to do and the reaction of financial markets and the economy after that. But I think for me, the bottom line is this. Yes, the Reserve Bank is cut, but that's not where growth is going to come from. Growth is going to come from structural economic reforms. So now it is in the hands of government to actually, you know, implement the structural reforms that are required to lift economic growth. We cannot really expect the SARB to do the heavy lifting. In any case, we need a minimum of a 100 basis point cuts in interest rates to improve economic growth by 0.5%, which is far from being possible to be done.
That's Isaac Mhlanga. He is the chief economist at Alexander Forbes. Well, the finance minister, Tito Mboweni, today playing down reports after he tweeted something along the lines of, well, it's, you know, it's better to retire gracefully or something along those lines. He was challenged then. Are you going to resign, Mr. Minister? And he said, no. He's off to Davos next week. He's going to lead the Team South Africa delegation. He wants to present a strong investment case for the country at the World Economic Forum, despite South Africa being in... on the economic precipice, crippling power outages, deep uncertainty, of course. But the National Treasury's Director General, Dondo Mokgojane, came on to the show and I asked him whether or not this trip to Davos will be worthwhile.
There's a session, Bruce, where the country-specific dialogue is going to take place, where it's a very focused conversation with 60 global investors, 60 global CEOs, and we are going to be partnering with them in this room. And we want to, you know, obviously we want to open up in terms of our challenges. We cannot go and actually paint a good picture altogether, but we want to be saying to them, we have our challenges. We are politically stable and we know what our challenges are and we are prepared and we've demonstrated that there are some challenges and special reforms that we need to embark on and we have ticked some of the boxes. We've got the IRP in place. We've got a process in place to actually unlock the spectrum release and the regulator is very clear in terms of what needs to be done. And then we remain a very focused, important destination for the rest of Africa. That's the message that you're going to be sending out there with the rest of the delegation from business that's going to be going there.
Dondo Mokgojane, who is the Director General in the National Treasury. Well, 2017, the digital services company EOH, it was a market darling. 170 rand a share. Could do nothing wrong. Then there was a series of suggestions and then corruption allegations, then charges, and the share price imploded. And 2 years ago, Stephen van Coller was appointed as the chief executive. And I wonder whether or not he would have accepted the job had he known just how rotten the place was. Many of its companies involved in corrupt practices. And he penned a piece this week and told us what he'd learned about corruption during his time at the helm. And the guy who worked in banking thought everybody was honest. Of course he did. For two decades, he thought he'd seen it all. But turns out he hadn't.
What's really interesting is I think we totally underestimate what a great learning place a bank is. I spent 20 years in banking. I just expected that this is how businesses got run. Also, you know, when you're dealing in corporate investment banking, you tend to only deal with the real top companies. And you don't really look further down and realize that, you know, when I went in there, I just expected there to be a risk department or a compliance department. There was one person for 11,000 people. It was a bit of a surprise. You know, when I asked for, can you give me the last 6 months Exco tax in minutes so I can go through them, they didn't exist. And it was just stuff I expected because that's what you do, you know. And I think that was really the wake-up call for me.
I mean, and it's that boring stuff. I mean, it's the boring stuff of compliance, which, I mean, it's the biggest department in most banks nowadays. I mean, compliance departments in banks 5 years ago employed 20 people. Now they employ 200 or 400 or more. So when it comes to this sort of limited idea of limited governance and compliance, it's do you think it was by default or design? I mean, it was EOH set up with very few corporate governance and compliance structures to aid and abet corruption, or did they simply not do it and the chancellors saw an opportunity by virtue of the fact that that stuff didn't exist to act corruptly?
Yeah, I think, Bruce, it was really this business grew very fast. And when you're in a small entrepreneurial business, you just don't have enough money to have all fancy systems. But when it's small, as an owner, you know what's going on everywhere. When it gets big, you don't. And this is where you need to put the systems in place. And I think what happened here is as these problems start emerging, you don't really want to uncover it because you're too scared to, you know, what you find.
That's Stephen van Coller, Chief Executive at EOH, who then had to face those demons, of course, and do the uncovering, and the consequences will be felt. But yeah, as investors in EOH, you've seen 90% of the share price evaporate. It's not as bad as Steinhoff, but close. Coming up in a moment, the Brutal Biz Quiz, and I'd like you to play, please, on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. And your first question this evening is, where will you find Greta Thunberg, Donald Trump, Angela Merkel, Christine Lagarde, and me next week?
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that gives your business access to a corridor of possibilities. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. The Money Show. The Brutal Biz Quiz.
Where will you find Greta Thunberg, Donald Trump, Angela Merkel, Christine Lagarde, and me next week? I wonder where I will be, Menaz?
Menaz?
Hi.
In Davos.
In Davos, yes, we will be. Us, I'm going to be hanging with the cool kids. World Economic Forum 2020 in Davos next week. And we'll be broadcasting live from there, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week. Where does the annual Consumer Electronics Show happen in January every year? It's a city.
Barcelona?
I'm afraid not, Menaz. There was a song. It started with the word Viva. It is a place in the middle of nowhere. No, it's not Bloemfontein. It's a bit like Bloemfontein, but without the charm. So where does the Consumer Electronics Show happen in January annually? There are songs about it. Some of the world's greatest entertainers have operated there. You can lose your shirt and your pants as well. Martin?
Las Vegas,
absolutely right. Worldwide Works MD Arthur Goldstuck was talking to us about it this week, of course, and all the latest tech and trends. Which company just joined Apple and Microsoft as being a $1 trillion company? Did it last night?
Facebook.
I'm afraid not, Martin. It's as easy as ABC. That is about as close as I can get to giving you some sort of a clue this evening on The Money Show. Let's try you, Danny.
It's Alphabet.
Absolutely, as easy as ABC. Shares in Google, the Google parent company, hit a new all-time high yesterday, $1 trillion value. Which one of these three companies said this week it was aiming to remove more carbon than it emits by 2030? It was either Apple or Microsoft, or Alphabet. One of them said it will remove more carbon than it emits by 2030, I beg your pardon.
Apple.
It was the other one, I'm afraid, Danny, so no. I'm not going to repeat the question because that would strike me as being just a little bit too kind, a little bit too generous, and this is the Brutal Biz Quiz. It's the tough version of the Biz Quiz, which is usually the nice, calm Biz Quiz. But which company this week? And it's quite an extraordinary commitment to make. CNN reporting that this particular company plans to cut its own carbon emissions. They're projected to be about 16 million metric tons a year by more than half, both in its own operations and in its own supply chain. But it wants to remove more carbon than it emits by 2030. Who's got an answer for me on that one? On 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. It's time to play the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening. And we will try William before we close up the Money Show this evening. William?
It's Microsoft, Bruce.
Absolutely, William. It's Microsoft. Which South African listed company owns the likes of Cartier, Van Cleef & Arpels, Mont Blanc, Dunhill, even Chloe? They own that brand too. Which one is it, William?
I'm not sure, Bruce.
It's one of the world's biggest luxury goods companies, William. No, William. But thank you for playing, William. William just goes quiet. William's a strong, silent type, you see. Tumelano?
Hello, sir. It's Richmond.
Richmond, absolutely right. And which committee decides whether you pay more or less for your money?
Which one, Bruce?
Which committee decides whether you will pay more or less for your money? They meet every 2 months.
The Monetary Policy Committee, Reserve Bank.
Well done, Tumelano. Makes you the winner of the Brutal Biz Quiz. Well done to you, Tumelano, coming in at the death there. Yes, the Monetary Policy Committee of the Reserve Bank is the deciding agency as to whether or not you pay more or less to borrow money from the bank. And yesterday, they cut interest rates by 25 basis points. But as Maya Fisher-French told us on The Money Show last night, do not spend the money. Phone your bank. You should have done so already today. And you should have said to them, please, keep my payment stable. Do not cut the amount of money I pay you, because I want to pay you more money for less time, and that way I will save over a 20-year bond. That podcast and all the others are up on our website or via your favorite podcast app. Thank you for listening to The Money Show, and thank you, Greg and Swade. Enjoy your schnitzel, and I don't even know how to pronounce that word. I'm going to write it down and ask for some. I hope it's not disgusting. Thank you, Greg. Good night.